This is the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I am Jenny Beck-Esme, editor-in-chief of Feminem. I'm excited to be bringing you our next Fix 18 content. This is from Dr. Valerie Dobiez. It's called Gender-Based Violence as a Global Pandemic. Dr. Dobiez is director of internal programs for Stratus Center for Medical Simulation at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and she's core faculty at the Harvard Humanitarian Initiative, where she co-leads a program on education in conflict. On top of that, she is a social justice and women's rights advocate, and she tackles both of these topics in her Fix 18 talk on gender-based violence. Here you go.
Because I have a great deal of passion for this as a global pandemic, violence against women, my sense of social justice. And I'm going to dedicate it as a humanitarian, as a clinician, as a mother, as a sister, as a daughter, and my circle of tribe women who are in this room right now. So we know that this is a moment that we need to seize. Women, men in this room, we need to know that we need to be a call to action against violence against women. So back in the fall, it was so prevalent in the news everywhere about Hollywood, about media, about these amazing women that came forward to break the silence of what was known to be pervasive for up higher. Sorry, I get so excited. Okay. We knew, and so we were mobilized to write an article. Julia Brooks and I, she's at the Harvard Humanitarian Initiative, to talk about this, not just in Hollywood. We knew this was the tip of the iceberg, and this was pervasive in everywhere in the world. Anywhere that there is a business, an organization that has male dominance and gender inequity, there is sexual violence and violence against women, and we know that. So why is this important? Because I believe to my core that girls and women in the world have a right to be safe, to be free of violence. This is an amazing quote. And I would say this as a universal truth, that violence against women is never acceptable. It is never excusable, and it is never tolerable. And that's what we should all walk away with. I'm going to put a canvas about in the women. We brought up many of the faculty or the speakers today have talked about misogyny and racism that we have experienced. How many in this room right now have either experienced violence, or the women have experienced violence and or someone that you know? Please raise your hand and look around. All right, it is everywhere and it's every one of us. I was just delighted. 2 weeks ago, the timing of this came out. The Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to two heroes in fighting against violence against women, in particular rape as a weapon of war, Dr. Denis Mukwege and Nadia Murad. If you don't know them, you should read about them. Their stories are amazing. I had the great privilege to work with Dr. Mukwege in 2007 in the Congo to do a needs assessment. He is the most amazing pro-woman man I have ever met in my entire life. His hospital, Ponzi Hospital, is dedicated to women that have been ravaged and abused and horrific ways. He dedicates himself to these women. And Nadia Murad is a Yazidi woman who was captured by ISIS for 3 years and was a sex slave. And it's a horrific story. And her bravery coming out with her story and for her people is amazing and inspires me. And I have to say that meeting Dr. Mukwege changed my life and has emboldened me to be more of an activist for women in every sphere that I work in. So we know, again, it's in the paper every day, the levels of violence we know are horrific. So in this room, everyone raised their hand almost. I didn't see a hand that wasn't. One in three women will experience violence. It's a pandemic. It's in everything that we see and do. It can be sexual, it can be physical violence, and it could be psychological. All are forms of violence. Now here, some of this makes me incredibly sad when I prepare this. I have lost countless nights of sleep preparing for this. Half of it makes me so sad and discouraged, and half of it makes me inspired and to do more and to be activist. And I'm gonna say I want you, this to be a call to action for you. So the UN declared this as a pandemic in 1993, and they implemented many programs to stop violence against women. How successful were they? Any guesses? They were not. They were not. Same prevalence. So as everyone in this room is aware, it's everywhere, every country. There is no country that is without. I think Japan has a rate of 15%. And maybe Ethiopia 71%, so depending on where you live in the world, it may change, but it's everywhere. Now, why do we care? Why is this a problem? This pervasiveness of gender violence or violence against women is that it has incredible health implications. Just like litigation stress, it is not different. If for our presenters earlier, when a man says to you, a surgeon that you're working with, you have a beautiful mouth and what that you can do with it, can you imagine what that does to women who are trying in their careers and their profession and their life? We know that we're twice as likely to be depressed, to suffer from anxiety, to abuse alcohol or other substances. We have problems with our pregnancies, stillbirth, and early preterm labor. We're more susceptible with sexual violence to sexually transmitted diseases and HIV around the world, let alone being physically injured. From the very first case today, the woman came in for chest pain, and in reality, that was pretty profound and prophetic that it was actually her husband was physically abusing her. So, and our women are at risk of death. 55% of the homicides in the world are by intimate partners, by boyfriends and husbands. So this is the uplifting part, all the different types of violence that occur or perpetrated against the women of the world. So, another presenter talked about population, and this is where my mind goes, is that it's not 50% as it should be, because infanticide and sex selection happens early. The world, many places in the world, do not value female children, and that is especially in China, it has skewed our population. But female genital mutilation usually occurs before 5 years of age. There are short and long-term complications from this with pregnancies, let alone taking away the sexual pleasure for women, over 200 million women in the world today. Now, there's other statistics about women's initiation into sex or having sexual activity around the world. This is one in particular that highlights Ghana, 21%. Their first sexual experience was by rape, was non-consensual. And the statistics vary from country to country. South Africa, it's 40%. In the US, it's estimated to be 20%. What a staggering statistic. We'll talk child marriage, which is devastating. I'm not gonna share too many of my personal stories because everyone in the room has them. But one of my first memories as a child, I was four, and I was in the park with a group of other children, I was the youngest, when a man walked up in the middle while we were we had a little circle, pulls down his pants, exposes himself to us, and we're all in shock. We have no understanding of what's going on. One of the other boys came up in our group, Stefan, told us to run. And what I remember distinctly and clearly is his desert boot. I was the youngest and slowest. Stefan, the older boy, came up on his bike to get me. And I remember this, the epinephrine, norepinephrine, the memory. You know what I'm talking about. I may not remember the date or but to this day, I have a vivid recollection of that boot hitting right behind me as I got onto the bike and sped away. So a near miss for me, and later my mother did tell me that in that same park, there were missing girls that were never seen again. That is a memory that I hold, and a desert boot. So it's none of us are immune to this. The intimate partner violence, we know, is a horrific fact. And in this room, I guarantee you, there are people impacted by this very statistics. And Esther Chu, is she here? Shout out to her. She wrote about this. So again, just because we're physicians, because we're privileged, does not mean we're immune to this. And I know of students, I know of residents, I know of faculty who have come to me and have experienced this. We are not immune. My own personal life, and it's something I will share, is my home was included intimate partner violence. The target was my mother. She was from a different country, spoke a different language, isolated, and she absolutely, physically and emotionally was abused. And I remember, and this is a shout out to Megan Rainey, who, she's somewhere in there, Megan, about gun violence. And another vivid memory, I can't tell you the date, I can't tell you, but I can remember being called down by my mother one night to come into the living room with my father, and he had a loaded gun. And she told me, "Valerie, tell your father how much you love him." I was 10. What had transpired after that, he shot the television and he did point the gun at my mother. So I, as a 10-year-old, I don't know where the courage and bravery came, went in between them, lifted his arm up, screamed at him and said no. I eventually ran out the back door in my bare feet and my pajamas to a neighbor where the police were called. Fortunately, nothing happened that night, more than that, but we're a near miss. Gun violence. So violence against women, look where we, at the U.S., that's pretty shocking. And why this is such a lethal and deadly condition for women. So honor killings. There is no honor in murdering your children, in my mind, ever. War, rape is a weapon of war, prevalent in many genocides all over the world. Okay, so we're getting desensitized to this. I read the paper with a gendered view. I'm trying to view it from different ethnicities, different religions, different cultures, but I definitely read the paper with a gendered view and a gendered lens. Every single day, there is some horrific article about violence perpetrated against women. This one in particular was the village had a land dispute, and in order to settle the land dispute, they raped 4 young girls, and that's how they handled that. What about those of us who are sending our daughters and our sons to college? Rape on campus is, the culture is there, it's real. And this is only what's reported. So 1 in 5 of our women will be sexually assaulted in college. And I am at Harvard at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. We're no different. It's every single college campus. And think about sending our children. Actually, men are assaulted as well, but to a lesser degree, a much lesser degree. We've got to stop. And okay, I'm gonna talk, the last part is about harassment, and many comments were made already about what we experience about sexual harassment, gender harassment in the workplace. This was one of the first studies that was done that I took notice of, and several of my daughters are now doing field work in their PhD. So they looked at the SAFE study. 71% of women were harassed or reported being harassed. 26% were sexually assaulted. This is pretty horrific. And they also talked about how often they reported it and how often there was a good conclusion, which is not good. Why do we not report it? Why don't we come forward when those comments are said to us, when there's harassment, when there's sexual coercion? Because, and I'll guarantee you, I have experienced this, feeling marginalized, stigmatized, retaliation. So when I said to our educational leadership a long time ago, I don't think it's a good idea that we promote going to strip clubs with our residents. I'm not lying. I said, I really don't think that the educational leadership should organize it, pick the venue, and have our male and female residents go to a strip club as a sanctioned activity. I don't want to call out names, but this is real. And this was activities that were done. I was made to feel like, what is wrong with me? That is a good, and the women who work there want to work there, it was what I was told. And I was made, I'm not kidding, I have so many stories. All right, but these are the statistics, this is the reality, here is my hope for us. The hashtag MeToo movement, that we're energized, we're mobilized. Has everybody read this? I have a copy. I'm happy to share it with you. So this is the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. This is the most comprehensive research-based review of sexual harassment of women. So how many, what percent of medical students report sexual harassment?
50.
Yeah, you know, the 50%, they know. 50%, that's what's reported. And medicine is higher than engineering and science. It can be from superiors, it can be from families, it can be from patients, but 50% of our young women are experiencing sexual harassment. Now here, we're starting to read about it, write about it, about our own experiences, and I guarantee, and later I would like to hear your stories, because I believe you, we believe you, and hashtag me too, in medicine, and why there's, this is great data and literature. So any specialty in medicine is no different, where there is male-dominated leadership and gender inequities, where there's a gap in leadership and career advancement for women, there will be sexual harassment. Does that seem like it's in the house of medicine? Do you think that exists? Well, there's a call out to saying that our institutions have got to stop. And here, another shout out, Dara, woo! To talk about the chronic nature of, and Esther and Jane Van Dees is here. So the three women who are here in this audience today. Yes, yes. Who are writing about it, who are saying this is a chronic problem in medicine and that you can't just go for the egregious sexual predators, right? Those that are overtly criminal. You have to go after every single element of gender, sexual harassment that occurs. The objectification, the verbal and nonverbal, every single one you have to go for. It has to be systemic, and institutions have to stop their permissiveness. You have to get it at the root causes, and all of us, everyone in this room, can identify it. Men and women have to be the change agents to make this better for all of us. So yes, let's do this. Let's be active, let's report, let's not condone and allow those comments to come forward. And for me, I'm a domestic violence advocate. I worked at a place called Sarah's Inn, and now I support a women's homeless shelter. I have never been more energized to support the women in my circle, from the Hammer residents to my Brigham faculty to the Mass General. We're mobilizing. I want us to lift up Those of you in the room thinking, Sarah Unterman, I saw her at the break, thinking about staying on as chief of service, do it. We need you in leadership. So I'm going to dedicate this. I know you're hungry. You guys have been awesome. Seriously, you're starving. But these are my three beautiful, amazing daughters. And I want, yes. I want this world to be safer for them. And I'm going to dedicate this to my son as well, because it's the boys, girls, women, men, all of us need to make this change, to make it permanent, to make it substantive. So that's my call to action for all of you. Thank you so much.